Valet, the valet killed him. Good heavens, can they condemn him in place of the valet? And will no one stand up for him? They haven't troubled the valet at all, have they?
He's been severely cross-examined, observed Alyosha thoughtfully, but everyone came to the conclusion it was not he. Now he's lying very ill. He has been ill ever since that attack, really ill, added Alyosha.
Oh, dear. Couldn't you go to that council yourself and tell him the whole thing by yourself? He's been brought from Petersburg for 3,000 rubles, they say.
We gave these 3,000 together, Ivan, Katerina Ivanovna and I, but she paid 2,000 for the doctor from Moscow herself. The council, Fetyukovich, would have charged more, but the case has become known all over Russia. It's talked of in all the papers and journals. Fetyukovich agreed to come for the glory of the thing, because the case has become so notorious. I saw him yesterday.
Well, did you talk to him?
Grushenka put in eagerly. He listened and said nothing. He told me that he had already formed his opinion. But he promised to give my words consideration.
Consideration? Ah, they're swindlers. They'll ruin him. And why did she send for the doctor?
As an expert, they want to prove that Mitya's mad and committed the murder when he didn't know what he was doing. Alyosha smiled gently. But Mitya won't agree to that.
Yes, but that would be the truth if he had killed him, cried Grushenka. He was mad then, perfectly mad, and that was my fault, wretch that I am. But of course he didn't do it, he didn't do it. And they're all against him, the whole town. Even Fenya's evidence went to prove he'd done it. And the people at the shop, and that official, and at the tavern, too, before people had heard him say so, they're all against him, all crying out against him.
Yes, there's a fearful accumulation of evidence, Alyosha observed grimly.
And Grigory Vasilievich, sticks to his story that the door was open. Persists that he saw it. There's no shaking him. I went and talked to him myself. He's rude about it, too.
Yes, that's perhaps the strongest evidence against him, said Alyosha.
And as for Mitya's being mad, he certainly seems like it now.
Grushenka began with a peculiarly anxious and mysterious air.
Do you know, Alyosha, I've been wanting to talk to you about it for a long time. I go to him every day and simply wonder at him. Tell me now, what do you suppose he's always talking about? He talks and talks, and I can make nothing of it. I fancied he was talking of something intellectual that I couldn't understand in my foolishness. Only he suddenly began talking to me about a babe. That is, about some child. Why is the babe poor, he said. It's for that babe I'm going to Siberia now. I'm not a murderer, but I must go to Siberia. What that meant, what babe, I couldn't tell for the life of me. Only I cried when he said it, because he said it so nicely. He cried himself, and I cried too. He suddenly kissed me and made the sign of the cross over me. What did it mean, Alyosha, tell me? What is this babe?
It must be Rakitin, who's been going to see him lately, smiled Alyosha. Though, that's not Rakitin's doing. I didn't see Mitya yesterday. I'll see him today.
No, it's not Rakitin. It's his brother, Ivan Fyodorovich, upsetting him. It's his going to see him. That's what it is.
Grushenka began and suddenly broke off. Alyosha gazed at her in amazement. Ivan's going? Has he been to see him? Mitya told me himself that Ivan hasn't been once.
There, there, what a girl I am, blurting things out, exclaimed Grushenka, confused and suddenly blushing. Stay, Alyosha, hush. Since I've said so much, I'll tell the whole truth. He's been to see him twice. The first time directly he arrived. He galloped here from Moscow at once, of course, before I was taken ill, and the second time was a week ago. He told Mitya not to tell you about it under any circumstances, and not to tell anyone, in fact. He came secretly.
Alyosha sat plunged in thought, considering something. The news evidently impressed him.
Ivan doesn't talk to me of Mitya's case, he said slowly. He's said very little to me these last 2 months. And whenever I go to see him, he seems vexed at my coming. So I've not been to him for the last 3 weeks.
If he was there a week ago, certainly has been a change in Mitya this week. There has been a change,
Grushenka assented quickly.
They have a secret. They have a secret. Mitya told me himself there was a secret, and such a secret that Mitya can't rest. Before then he was cheerful. and indeed he's cheerful now. But when he shakes his head like that, you know, and strides about the room and keeps pulling at the hair on his right temple with his right hand, I know there's something on his mind worrying him. I know. He was cheerful before, though. Indeed, he's cheerful today.
But you said he was worried.
Yes, he is worried. And yet cheerful, he keeps on being irritable for a minute, and then cheerful, and then irritable again. And you know, Alyosha, I'm constantly wondering at him, with this awful thing hanging over him. He sometimes laughs at such trifles, as though he were a baby himself.
And did he really tell you not to tell me about Ivan? Did he say, don't tell him?
Yes, he told me, don't tell him.
It's you that Mitya's most afraid of. Because it's a secret, he said himself it was a secret.
Alyosha, darling, go to him and find out what their secret is and come and tell me.
Grushenka besought him with sudden eagerness.
Set my mind at rest, that I may know the worst that's in store for me. That's why I sent for you.
You think it's something to do with you? If it were, he wouldn't have told you there was a secret.
I don't know. Perhaps he wants to tell me, but doesn't dare to. He warns me. There is a secret, he tells me, but he won't tell me what it is.
What do you think yourself?
What do I think? It's the end for me, that's what I think. They all three have been plotting my end, for Katerina's in it. It's all Katerina, it all comes from her. She is this, and that means that I'm not. He tells me that beforehand, warns me. He's planning to throw me over, that's the whole secret. They've planned it together, the three of them, Mitya, Katerina, and even Fyodorovitch. Alyosha, I've been wanting to ask you a long time. A week ago he suddenly told me that Ivan was in love with Katerina because he often goes to see her. Did he tell me the truth or not? Tell me on your conscience. Tell me the worst.
I won't tell you a lie. Ivan is not in love with Katerina Ivanovna, I think.
Oh, that's what I thought. He's lying to me, shameless deceiver, that's what it is. And he was jealous of me just now, so as to put the blame on me afterwards. He's stupid, he can't disguise what he's doing. He's so open, you know. But I'll give it to him, I'll give it to him. You believe I did it, he said. He said that to me. He reproached me with that. God forgive him. You wait, I'll make it hot for Katerina at the trial. I'll just say a word then. I'll tell everything then.
And again she cried bitterly. This I can tell you for certain, Grushenka, Alyosha said, getting up. First, that he loves you more than anyone in the world, and you only. Believe me, I know, I do know. The second thing is that I don't want to worm his secret out of him, but if he'll tell me of himself today, I shall tell him straight out that I promised to tell you. Then I'll come to you today and tell you. Only, I fancy, Katerina Ivanovna has nothing to do with it, and that the secret is about something else. That's certain. It isn't likely it's about Katerina Ivanovna, it seems to me. Goodbye for now. Alyosha shook hands with her. Grushenka was still crying. He saw that she put little faith in his consolation. But she was better for having had her sorrow out, for having spoken of it. He was sorry to leave her in such a state of mind, but he was in haste. He had a great many things to do still. Chapter 2. The Injured Foot. The first of these things was at the house of Madame Holakov, and he hurried there to get it over as quickly as possible, and not to be too late for Mitya. Madame Holakov had been slightly ailing for the last 3 weeks. Her foot had for some reason swollen up, and though she was not in bed, she lay all day half-reclining on the couch in her boudoir, in a fascinating but decorous déshabillé. Alyosha had once noted with innocent amusement that, in spite of her illness, Madame Holakov had begun to be rather dressy. Top-knots, ribbons, loose wrappers had made their appearance, and he had an inkling of the reason, though he dismissed such ideas from his mind as frivolous. During the last 2 months, the young official Perhotin had become a regular visitor at the house. Alyosha had not called for 4 days, and he was in haste to go straight to Lisa. As it was with her, he had to speak. For Lisa had sent a maid to him the previous day, specially asking him to come to her about something very important, a request which for certain reasons had interest for Alyosha. But while the maid went to take his name in to Lisa, Madame Holakov heard of his arrival from someone, and immediately sent to beg him to come to her just for 1 minute.
Alyosha reflected that it was better to accede to the mamma's request, or else she would be sending down to Lisa's room every minute that he was there. Madame Holokov was lying on a couch. She was particularly smartly dressed, and was evidently in a state of extreme nervous excitement. She greeted Alyosha with cries of rapture. "It's ages, ages, perfect ages since I've seen you. It's a whole week, only think of it. Ah, but you were here only 4 days ago on Wednesday. You've come to see Lisa. I'm sure you meant to slip into her room on tiptoe without my hearing you. My dear, dear Alexei Fyodorovich, if you only knew how worried I am about her. But of that later, though that's the most important thing, of that later. Dear Alexei Fyodorovich, I trust you implicitly with my Lisa. Since the death of Father Zosima, God rest his soul," she crossed herself, "I look upon you as a monk, though you look charming in your new suit. Where did you find such a tailor in these parts? No, no, that's not the chief thing. Of that later. Forgive me for sometimes calling you Alyosha. An old woman like me may take liberties." She smiled coquettishly. "But that will do later, too. The important thing is that I shouldn't forget what is important. Please remind me of it yourself. As soon as my tongue runs away from me, you just say, 'The important thing.' Ah, how do I know what is of most importance? Ever since Lisa took back her promise, her childish promise, Alexei Fyodorovich, to marry you, you've realized, of course, that it was only the playful fancy of a sick child who had been so long confined to her chair. Thank God she can walk now. That new doctor Katya sent for from Moscow for your unhappy brother, who will tomorrow... But why speak of tomorrow? I'm ready to die at the very thought of tomorrow, ready to die of curiosity. That doctor was with us yesterday and saw Lisa. I paid him 50 rubles for the visit. But that's not the point. That's not the point again. You see, I'm mixing everything up. I'm in such a hurry. Why am I in such a hurry? I don't understand. It's awful how I seem growing unable to understand anything. Everything seems mixed up in a sort of tangle. I'm afraid you're so bored you'll jump up and run away, and that will be all I shall see of you. Goodness, why are we sitting here? And no coffee. Yulia, Glafira, coffee! Alyosha made haste to thank her and said that he had only just had coffee. Where? At Agrafena Alexandrovna's. Ah, at that woman's? Ah, it she has brought ruin on everyone. I know nothing about it, though. They say she's become a saint, though it's rather late in the day. She'd better have done it before. What use is it now? Hush, hush, Alexei Fyodorovich, for I've so much to say to you that I'm afraid I shall tell you nothing. This awful trial. I shall certainly go. I'm making arrangements. I shall be carried there in my chair. Besides, I can sit up. I shall have people with me. And you know, I am a witness. How shall I speak? How shall I speak? I don't know what I shall say. One has to take an oath, hasn't one?
Yes, but I don't think you'll be able to go.
I can sit up. Ah, you put me out. Ah, this trial, this savage act. And then they're all going to Siberia. Some are getting married, and all this so quickly, everything's changing, and at last, nothing. All grow old and have death to look forward to. Well, so be it, I'm weary. This Katya, cette charmante personne, has disappointed all my hopes. Now she's going to follow one of your brothers to Siberia, and your other brother is going to follow her, and will live in the nearest town, and they'll all torment one another. It drives me out of my mind. Worst of all, the publicity. The story has been told a million times over in all the papers in Moscow and Petersburg. Ah, yes, would you believe it? There's a paragraph that I was a dear friend of your brother's. I can't repeat the horrid word. Just fancy. Just fancy.
Impossible. Where was the paragraph? What did it say?
I'll show you directly. I got the paper and read it yesterday. Here in the Petersburg paper, Gossip. The paper began coming out this year. I'm awfully fond of gossip. And I take it in, and now it pays me out. This is what gossip comes to. Here it is, here. This passage, read it.
And she handed Alyosha a sheet of newspaper, which had been under her pillow. It was not exactly that she was upset. She seemed overwhelmed, and perhaps everything really was mixed up in a tangle in her head. The paragraph was very typical, and must have been a great shock to her, but, fortunately perhaps, she was unable to keep her mind fixed on any one subject at that moment, and so might race off in a minute to something else and quite forget the newspaper. Alyosha was well aware that the story of the terrible case had spread all over Russia, and good heavens!
What wild rumours about his brother, about the Karamazovs, and about himself he had read in the course of those 2 months, among other equally credible items. One paper had even stated that he'd gone into a monastery and become a monk, in horror at his brother's crime. Another contradicted this and stated that he and his elder, Father Zosima, had broken into the monastery chest and made tracks from the monastery. The present paragraph in the paper Gossip was under the heading, "The Karamazov Case at Skoto-Prigonyevsk." That, alas, was the name of our little town. I had hitherto kept it concealed. It was brief, and Madame Holokov was not directly mentioned in it. No names appeared, in fact. It was merely stated that the criminal, whose approaching trial was making such a sensation, retired army captain, an idle swaggerer and reactionary bully, was continually involved in amorous intrigues, and particularly popular with certain ladies, who were pining in solitude. One such lady, a pining widow, who tried to seem young though she had a grown-up daughter, was so fascinated by him that only 2 hours before the crime she offered him 3,000 rubles, on condition that he would elope with her to the gold mines. But the criminal, counting on escaping punishment, had preferred to murder his father to get the 3,000 rather than go off to Siberia with the middle-aged charms of his pining lady. This playful paragraph finished, of course, with an outburst of generous indignation at the wickedness of parricide and the lately abolished institution of serfdom. Reading it with curiosity, Alyosha folded up the paper and handed it back to Madame Holokov.
"Well, that must be me," she hurried on again. "Of course, I am meant. Scarce more than an hour before I suggested gold miners to him, and here they talk of middle-aged charms, as though they were my motive. He writes that out of spite. God Almighty forgive him for the middle-aged charms, as I forgive him. You know, it's—do you know who it is? It's your friend Rakitin."
"Perhaps," said Alyosha, "though I've heard nothing about it."
It's he, no perhaps about it. You know I turned him out of the house. You know all that story, don't you?"
"I know that you asked him not to visit you for the future, but why it was, I haven't heard, from you at least."
"Ah, then you have heard it from him. He abuses me, I suppose, abuses me dreadfully."
"Yes, he does, but then he abuses everyone. But why you've given him up, I haven't heard from him either. I meet him very seldom now, indeed. We're not friends."
"Well, then I'll tell you all about it. There's no help for it, I'll confess. There is one point in which I was perhaps to blame. Only a little point, so little that perhaps it doesn't count. You see, my dear boy," Madame Holokov suddenly looked arch, and a charming, though enigmatic, smile played about her lips. "You see, I suspect... You must forgive me, Alyosha, I'm like a mother to you. No, no, quite the contrary. I speak to you now as though you were my father. Mother's quite out of place. Well, it's as though I were confessing to Father Zosima, that's just it. I called you a monk just now. Well, that poor young man, your friend, Rakitin, mercy on us, I can't be angry with him, I feel cross, but not very. That frivolous young man, would you believe it, seems to have taken it into his head to fall in love with me. I only noticed it later. At first, a month ago, he only began to come oftener to see me, almost every day, though, of course, we were acquainted before. I knew nothing about it, and suddenly it dawned upon me, and I began to notice things with surprise. You know, 2 months ago, that modest, charming, excellent young man, Pyotr Ilyich Perotin, who's in the service here, began to be a regular visitor at the house. You met him here ever so many times yourself, and he is an excellent, earnest young man, isn't he? He comes once every 3 days, not every day, though I should be glad to see him every day, and always so well-dressed. Altogether, I love young people, Alyosha. Talented, modest, like you. And he's almost the mind of a statesman, he talks so charmingly. And I shall certainly, certainly try and get promotion for him. He is a future diplomat. On that awful day, he almost saved me from death by coming in the night. And your friend Rakitin comes in such boots and always stretches them out on the carpet. He began hinting at his feelings, in fact, and one day as he was going, he squeezed my hand terribly hard. My foot began to swell directly after he pressed my hand like that. He had met Pyotr Ilyich here before, and would you believe it, he's always jibing at him, growling at him for some reason, I simply looked at the way they went on together and laughed inwardly. So I was sitting here alone. No, I was laid up then. Well, I was lying here alone, and suddenly Rakitin comes in, and only fancy brought me some verses of his own composition, a short poem on my bad foot. That is, he described my foot in a poem. Wait a minute, how did it go? A captivating little foot. It began somehow like that. I can never remember poetry. I've got it here. I'll show it to you later. But it's a charming thing, charming. And, you know, it's not only about the foot. It had a good moral, too, a charming idea. Only I've forgotten it. In fact, it was just the thing for an album. So, of course, I thanked him, and he was evidently flattered. I'd hardly had time to thank him when in comes Pyotr Ilyich, and Rakitin suddenly looked as black as night. I could see that Pyotr Ilyich was in the way, for Rakitin certainly wanted to say something after giving me the verses. I had a presentiment of it, but Pyotr Ilyich came in. I showed Pyotr Ilyich the verses, and didn't say who was the author. But I'm convinced that he guessed, though he won't own it to this day, and declares he had no idea. But he says that on purpose. Pyotr Ilyich began to laugh at once and fell to criticizing it. Wretched doggerel, he said they were. Some divinity student must have written them. And with such vehemence, such vehemence. Then instead of laughing, your friend flew into a rage. Good gracious, I thought, they'll fly at each other. It was I who wrote them, said he. I wrote them as a joke, he said, for I think it degrading to write verses. But they are good poetry. They want to put a monument to your Pushkin for writing about women's feet, while I wrote with a moral purpose. And you, said he, are an advocate of serfdom. You've no humane ideas, said he. You have no modern enlightened feelings. You are uninfluenced by progress. You are a mere official, he said, and you take bribes. Then I began screaming and imploring them. And you know, Pyotr Ilyich is anything but a coward. He at once took up the most gentlemanly tone, looked at him sarcastically, listened and apologized. I'd no idea, said he. I shouldn't have said it if I'd known. I should have praised it. Poets are all so irritable, he said. In short, he laughed at him under the cover of the most gentlemanly tone. He explained to me afterwards that it was all sarcastic. I thought he was in earnest. Only, as I lay there, just as before you now, I thought, would it or would it not be the proper thing for me to turn Rakitin out for shouting so rudely at a visitor in my house? And would you believe it, I lay here, shut my eyes and wondered, would it be the proper thing or not? I kept worrying and worrying, and my heart began to beat, and I couldn't make up my mind whether to make an outcry or not. One voice seemed to be telling me, speak, and the other, no, don't speak. And no sooner had the second voice said that than I cried out and fainted. Of course, it was a fuss. I got up suddenly and said to Rakitin, it's painful for me to say it, but I don't wish to see you in my house again. So I turned him out. Ah, Alexei Fyodorovitch, I know myself I did wrong. I was putting it on. I wasn't angry with him at all, really. But I suddenly fancied, that was what did it, that it would be such a fine scene. And yet, believe me, it was quite natural, for I rarely shed tears and cried for several days afterwards, and then suddenly one afternoon I forgot all about it. So it's a fortnight since he's been here, and I kept wondering whether he would come again. I wondered even yesterday. Then suddenly last night came this gossip. I read it and gasped. Who could have written it? He must have written it. He went home, sat down, wrote it on the spot, sent it, and they put it in. It was a fortnight ago, you see. But, Alyosha, it's awful how I keep talking and don't say what I want to say. Ah, the words come for themselves.
It's very important for me to be in time to see my brother today. Alyosha faltered.
To be sure, to be sure. You bring it all back to me. Listen, what is an aberration?
What aberration? Asked Alyosha, wondering.
In the legal sense, an aberration in which everything is pardonable. Whatever you do, you will be acquitted at once.
What do you mean?
Well, I'll tell you. This Katya, ah, she's a charming, charming creature. Only I can never make out who it is she's in love with. She was with me some time ago, and I couldn't get anything out of her, especially as she won't talk to me except on the surface now. She's always talking about my health and nothing else, and she takes up such a tone with me, too. I simply said to myself, Well, so be it. I don't care. Oh, yes, I was talking of aberration. This doctor's come. You know a doctor has come. Of course you know it. The one who discovers madmen. You wrote for him. No, it wasn't you, but Katya. It's all Katya's doing. Well, you see, a man may be sitting perfectly sane and suddenly have an aberration. He may be conscious and know what he's doing and yet be in a state of aberration. And there's no doubt that Dmitri Fyodorovich was suffering from aberration. They found out about aberration as soon as the law courts were reformed. It's all the good effect of the reformed law courts. The doctor has been here and questioned me about that evening, about the gold mines. How did he seem then, he asked me. He must have been in a state of aberration. He came in shouting, money, money, 3,000, give me 3,000, and then went away and immediately did the murder. I don't want to murder him, he said, and he suddenly went and murdered him. That's why they'll acquit him, because he struggled against it, and yet he murdered him. But he didn't murder him, Alyosha interrupted rather sharply. He felt more and more sick with anxiety and impatience. Yes, I know, it was that old man Grigory murdered him.
Grigory?
Cried Alyosha. Yes, yes, it was Grigory. He lay as Dmitri Fyodorovich struck him down, and then got up, saw the door open, and went in and killed Fyodor Pavlovich.
But why? Why?
Suffering from aberration. When he recovered from the blow Dmitri Fyodorovich gave him on the head, he was suffering from aberration. He went and committed the murder. As for his saying he didn't, he very likely doesn't remember. Only, you know, it'll be better, ever so much better, if Dmitri Fyodorovich murdered him. And that's how it must have been, though I say it was Grigory. Certainly was Dmitri Fyodorovich, and that's better. Ever so much better. Oh, not better that a son should have killed his father. I don't defend that. Children ought to honour their parents. And yet it would be better if it were he, as you'd have nothing to cry over then, for he did it when he was unconscious, or rather when he was conscious but did not know what he was doing. Let them acquit him. That's so humane, and would show what a blessing reformed law courts are. I knew nothing about it, but they say they've been so a long time. And when I heard it yesterday, I was so struck by it that I wanted to send for you at once. And if he is acquitted, make him come straight from the law courts to dinner with me, and I'll have a party of friends, and we'll drink to the reformed law courts. I don't believe he'd be dangerous. Besides, I'll invite a great many friends so that he could always be led out if he did anything. And then he might be made a justice of the peace or something in another town, for those who've been in trouble themselves make the best judges. And besides, who isn't suffering from aberration nowadays? You, I, all of us are in a state of aberration, and there are ever so many examples of it. A man sits singing a song, suddenly something annoys him, he takes a pistol and shoots the first person he comes across, and no one blames him for it. I read that lately, and all the doctors confirm it. The doctors are always confirming. They confirm anything. Why, my Lisa is in a state of aberration. She made me cry again yesterday, and the day before, too, and today I suddenly realized that it's all due to aberration. Oh, Lisa grieves me so. I believe she's quite mad. Why did she send for you? Did she send for you, or did you come for yourself?
Yes, she sent for me, and I'm just going to her. Alyosha got up resolutely.
Oh, my dear, dear Alexei Fyodorovich, perhaps that's what's most important.
Madame Holokov cried, suddenly bursting into tears.
God knows I trust Lisa to you with all my heart, and it's no matter her sending for you on the sly without telling her mother. But forgive me, I can't trust my daughter so easily to your brother Ivan Fyodorovich, though I still consider him the most chivalrous young man. But only fancy, he's been to see Lisa, and I knew nothing about it.
How? What? When?
Alyosha was exceedingly surprised. He had not sat down again and listened standing.
I'll tell you. That's perhaps why I asked you to come, for I don't know now why I did ask you to come. Well, Ivan Fyodorovich has been to see me twice since he came back from Moscow. First time he came as a friend to call on me, and the second time Katya was here, and he came because he heard she was here. I didn't, of course, expect him to come often, knowing what a lot he has to do as it is, vous comprenez, cet affaire est la mort terrible de votre papa. But I suddenly heard he'd been here again, not to see me, but to see Lisa. That's 6 days ago now. He came, stayed 5 minutes, and went away. And I didn't hear of it till 3 days afterwards, from Glafira. So it is a great shock to me. I sent for Lisa directly. She laughed. He thought you were asleep, she said, and came in to me to ask after your health. Of course, that's how it happened, but Lisa, Lisa, mercy on us, how she distresses me. Would you believe it, one night, 4 days ago, just after you saw her last time and had gone away, she suddenly had a fit, screaming, shrieking hysterics. Why is it I never have hysterics? Then next day another fit and the same thing on the third, and yesterday too, and then yesterday that apparition, she suddenly screamed out, I hate Ivan Fyodorovitch, I insist on your never letting him come to the house again. I was struck dumb at these amazing words and answered, On what grounds could I refuse to see such an excellent young man? A young man of such learning, too, and so unfortunate. For all this business is a misfortune, isn't it? She suddenly burst out laughing at my words, and so rudely, you know. Well, I was pleased. I thought I'd amused her, and the fits would pass off, especially as I wanted to refuse to see Ivan Fyodorovitch anyway on account of his strange visits without my knowledge, and meant to ask him for an explanation. But early this morning Lisa waked and flew into a passion with Yulia, and, would you believe it, slapped her in the face. That's monstrous. I'm always polite to my servants. And an hour later she was hugging Yulia's feet and kissing them. She sent a message to me that she wasn't coming to me at all, and would never come and see me again, and when I dragged myself down to her, she rushed to kiss me, crying, and as she kissed me, she pushed me out of the room without saying a word, so I couldn't find out what was the matter. Now, dear Alexei Fyodorovitch, I rest all my hopes on you, and of course, my whole life is in your hands. I simply beg you to go to Lisa and find out everything from her, as you alone can. And come back and tell me, her mother, for you understand it will be the death of me, simply the death of me if this goes on. Or else I shall run away. I can stand no more. I have patience, but I may lose patience, and then something awful will happen. Ah, dear me. At last, Pyotr Ilyich, cried Madame Holokov, beaming all over as she saw Perhotin enter the room. You are late, you are late. Well, sit down, speak, put us out of suspense. What does the counsel say? Where are you off to, Alexei Fyodorovitch? To Lisa. Oh, yes. You won't forget what I asked you. It's a question of life and death. Of course, I won't forget, if I can, but I'm so late, muttered Alyosha, beating a hasty retreat. No, be sure to come in. Don't say if you can. I shall die if you don't. Madame Holokov called after him, but Alyosha had already left the room. Chapter 3. A Little Demon. Going into Lisa, he found her half reclining in the invalid chair, in which she'd been wheeled when she was unable to walk. She did not move to meet him, but her sharp, keen eyes were simply riveted on his face. There was a feverish look in her eyes. Her face was pale and yellow. Alyosha was amazed at the change that had taken place in her in 3 days. She was positively thinner. She did not hold out her hand to him. He touched the thin, long fingers which lay motionless on her dress. Then he sat down facing her without a word. "I know you're in a hurry to get to the prison," Lisa said curtly. "And Mama's kept you there for hours. She's just been telling you about me and Yulia."
"How do you know?" asked Alyosha.
"I've been listening. Why do you stare at me? I want to listen, and I do listen. There's no harm in that. I don't apologize."
"You're upset about something?"
"On the contrary, I'm very happy. I've only just been reflecting for the 30th time what a good thing it is I refused you and shall not be your wife. You're not fit to be a husband. If I were to marry you and give you a note to take to the man I loved after you, you'd take it and be sure to give it to him and bring an answer back, too. If you were 40, you would still go on taking my love letters for me."
She suddenly laughed. "There is something spiteful and yet open-hearted about you." Alyosha smiled at her.
"The open-heartedness consists in my not being ashamed of myself with you. What's more, I don't want to feel ashamed with you. Just with you. Alyosha, why is it I don't respect you? I'm very fond of you, but I don't respect you. If I respected you, I shouldn't talk to you without shame, should I?"
"No."
"But do you believe that I'm not ashamed with you?"
"No, I don't believe it." Lisa laughed nervously again. She spoke rapidly.
"I sent your brother, Dmitri Fyodorovitch, some sweets in prison. Alyosha, you know, You are quite pretty. I shall love you awfully for having so quickly allowed me not to love you.
Why did you send for me today, Lisa?
I wanted to tell you of a longing I have. I should like someone to torture me, marry me, and then torture me, deceive me, and go away. I don't want to be happy.
You're in love with disorder?
Yes, I want disorder. I keep wanting to set fire to the house. I keep imagining how I'll creep up and set fire to the house on the sly. It must be on the sly. They'll try to put it out, but it'll go on burning, and I shall know and say nothing. Ah, what silliness, and how bored I am.
She waved her hand with a look of repulsion.
It's your luxurious life, said Alyosha softly. Is it better, then, to be poor?
Yes, it is better.
That's what your monk taught you. That's not true. Let me be rich and all the rest poor. I'll eat sweets and drink cream and not give any to anyone else. Ach, don't speak. Don't say anything.
She shook her hand at him, although Alyosha had not opened his mouth.
You've told me all that before. I know it all by heart. It bores me. If I am ever poor, I shall murder somebody. And even if I'm rich, I may murder someone, perhaps. Why do nothing? But, you know, I should like to reap, cut the rye. I'll marry you and you shall become a peasant, a real peasant. We'll keep a colt, shall we? Do you know Kalkanov?
Yes.
He's always wandering about, dreaming. He says, why live in real life? It's better to dream. One can dream the most delightful things, but real life is a bore. But he'll be married soon. For all that, he's been making love to me already. Can you spin tops?
Yes.
Well, he's just like a top. He wants to be wound up and set spinning and then to be lashed, lashed, lashed with a whip. If I marry him, I'll keep him spinning all his life. You're not ashamed to be with me?
No.
You're awfully cross because I don't talk about holy things. I don't want to be holy. What will they do to me in the next world for the greatest sin? You must know all about that.
God will censor you.
Alyosha was watching her steadily.
That's just what I should like. I would go up, and they would censure me, and I'd burst out laughing in their faces. I should dreadfully like to set fire to the house. Alyosha, to our house? You still don't believe me?
Why? There are children of 12 years old who have a longing to set fire to something, and they do set things on fire, too. It's a sort of disease.
That's not true. That's not true. There may be children, but that's not what I mean.
You take evil for good. It's a passing crisis. It's the result of your illness, perhaps.
You do despise me, though. It's simply that I don't want to do good. I want to do evil, and it has nothing to do with illness.
Why do evil?
So that everything might be destroyed. Ah, how nice it would be if everything were destroyed. You know, Alyosha, I sometimes think of doing a fearful lot of harm and everything bad, and I should do it for a long while on the sly, and suddenly everyone would find it out. Everyone would stand round and point their fingers at me, and I'd look at them all. That would be awfully nice. Why would it be so nice, Alyosha?
I don't know. It's a craving to destroy something good, or, as you say, to set fire to something. It happens sometimes.
I not only said I shall do it.
I believe you.
Ah, how I love you for saying you believe me. And you are not lying one little bit, but perhaps you think I'm saying all this on purpose to annoy you.
No, I don't think that. Though perhaps there is a little desire to do that in it, too.
There is a little. I never can tell lies to you, she declared, with a strange fire in her eyes.
What struck Alyosha above everything was her earnestness. There was not a trace of humour or jesting in her face now. Though in old days, fun and gaiety never deserted her, even at her most earnest moments.
There are moments when people love crime, said Alyosha thoughtfully.
Yes, yes, you've uttered my thought. They love crime. Everyone loves crime. They love it always, not at some moments. You know, it's as though people have made an agreement to lie about it and have lied about it ever since. They all declare that they hate evil. But secretly they all love it.
And are you still reading nasty books?
Yes, I am. Mama reads them and hides them under her pillow, and I steal them.
Aren't you ashamed to destroy yourself?
I want to destroy myself. There's a boy here who lay down between the railway lines when the train was passing. Lucky fellow. Listen, your brother is being tried now for murdering his father, and everyone loves his having killed his father.
Loves his having killed his father?
Yes, loves it. Everyone loves it.
Everybody says it's so awful, but secretly they simply love it. I, for one, love it.
There is some truth in what you say about everyone, said Alyosha softly.
Oh, what ideas you have, Lisa shrieked in delight. And you a monk, too. You wouldn't believe how I respect you, Alyosha, for never telling lies. Oh, I must tell you a funny dream of mine. I sometimes dream of devils. It's night. I'm in my room with a candle, and suddenly there are devils all over the place, in all the corners, under the table, and they open the doors. There's a crowd of them behind the doors, and they want to come and seize me. And they're just coming, just seizing me. But I suddenly cross myself, and they all draw back. Though they don't go away altogether, they stand at the doors and in the corners waiting. And suddenly I have a frightful longing to revile God aloud, and so I begin. And then they come crowding back to me, delighted, and seize me again, and I cross myself again, and they all draw back. It's awful fun. It takes one's breath away.
I've had the same dream, too, said Alyosha suddenly.
Really? Cried Lisa, surprised. I say, Alyosha, don't laugh. That's awfully important. Could two different people have the same dream?
It seems they can.
Alyosha, I tell you, it's awfully important, Lisa went on with really excessive amazement. It's not the dream that's important, but you're having the same dream as me. You never lie to me. Don't lie now. Is it true? You're not laughing?
It's true.
Lisa seemed extraordinarily impressed, and for half a minute she was silent.
Alyosha, come and see me. Come and see me more often, she said suddenly in a supplicating voice.
I'll always come to see you, all my life, answered Alyosha firmly.
You are the only person I can talk to, you know, Lisa began again. I talk to no one but myself and you, only you in the whole world, and to you more readily than to myself, and I'm not a bit ashamed with you, not a bit. Alyosha, why am I not ashamed with you, not a bit? Alyosha, is it true that at Easter the Jews steal a child and kill it?
I don't know.
There's a book here in which I read about the trial of a Jew who took a child of 4 years old and cut off the fingers from both hands and then crucified him on the wall, hammered nails into him and crucified him, and afterwards when he was tried he said that the child died soon, within 4 hours. That was soon. He said the child moaned, kept on moaning, and he stood admiring it. That's nice.
Nice?
Nice. I sometimes imagine that it was I who crucified him. He would hang there moaning, and I would sit opposite him eating pineapple compote. I'm awfully fond of pineapple compote. Do you like it?
Alyosha looked at her in silence. Her pale, sallow face was suddenly contorted. Her eyes burned.
You know, when I read about that Jew, I shook with sobs all night. I kept fancying how the little thing cried and moaned. A child of 4 years old understands, you know. And all the while the thought of pineapple compote haunted me. In the morning I wrote a letter to a certain person begging him particularly to come and see me. He came, and I suddenly told him all about the child and the pineapple compote, all about it all, and said that it was nice. He laughed and said it really was nice. Then he got up and went away. He was only here 5 minutes. Did he despise me? Did he despise me? Tell me, Alyosha, did he despise me or not?
She sat up on the couch with flashing eyes.
Tell me, Alyosha asked anxiously, did you send for that person?
Yes, I did.
Did you send him a letter?
Yes.
Simply to ask about that? About that child?
No, not about that at all. But when he came, I asked him about that at once. He answered, laughed, got up and went away.
That person behaved honorably, Alyosha murmured.
And did he despise me? Did he laugh at me?
No, for perhaps he believes in the pineapple compote himself. He's very ill now, too, Lisa.
Yes, he does believe in it, said Lisa with flashing eyes.
He doesn't despise anyone, Alyosha went on. Only he does not believe anyone. If he doesn't believe in people, of course, he does despise them.
Then he despises me? Me?
You too.
Good.
Lisa seemed to grind her teeth.
When he went out laughing, I felt that it was nice to be despised. The child with fingers cut off is nice, and to be despised is nice.
And she laughed at Alyosha's face, a feverish, malicious laugh.
Do you know, Alyosha, do you know, I should like... Alyosha, save me.
She suddenly jumped from the couch, rushed to him and seized him with both hands.
Save me!
She almost groaned.
Is there anyone in the world I can tell what I've told you? I've told you the truth, the truth. I shall kill myself because I loathe everything. I don't want to live because I loathe everything. I loathe everything, everything. Alyosha, why don't you love me in the least?
She finished in a frenzy.
But I do love you,
answered Alyosha warmly.
And will you weep over me? Will you?
Yes.
Not because I won't be your wife, but simply weep for me.
Yes.
Thank you. It's only your tears I want. Everyone else may punish me and trample me underfoot. Everyone, everyone, not excepting anyone, for I don't love anyone. Do you hear? Not anyone. On the contrary, I hate him. Go, Alyosha, it's time you went to your brother.
She tore herself away from him suddenly.
How can I leave you like this?
Said Alyosha, almost in alarm.
Go to your brother. The prison will be shut. Go. Here's your hat. Give my love to Mitya. Go. Go.
And she almost forcibly pushed Alyosha out of the door. He looked at her with pained surprise when he was suddenly aware of a letter in his right hand, a tiny letter folded up tight and sealed. He glanced at it and instantly read the address, to Ivan Fyodorovich Karamazov. He looked quickly at Lisa. Her face had become almost menacing.
Give it to him. You must give it to him, she ordered him, trembling and beside herself. Today, at once, or I'll poison myself. That's why I sent for you.
And she slammed the door quickly. The bolt clicked. Alyosha put the note in his pocket and went straight downstairs, without going back to Madame Holokov, forgetting her, in fact. As soon as Alyosha had gone, Lisa unbolted the door, opened it a little, put her finger in the crack, and slammed the door with all her might, pinching her finger. 10 seconds after releasing her finger, she walked softly, slowly to her chair, sat up straight in it, and looked intently at her blackened finger, and at the blood that oozed from under the nail. Her lips were quivering, and she kept whispering rapidly to herself,
I'm a wretch, 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 wretch.
Chapter 5. So be it, so be it. The elder's absence from his cell had lasted for about 25 minutes. It was more than 12:30, but Dmitri, on whose account they had all met there, had still not appeared. But he seemed almost to be forgotten, and when the elder entered the cell again, he found his guests engaged in eager conversation. Ivan and the two monks took the leading share in it. Yusuf, too, was trying to take a part, and apparently very eagerly in the conversation. But he was unsuccessful in this also. He was evidently in the background, and his remarks were treated with neglect, which increases irritability. He had had intellectual encounters with Ivan before, and he could not endure a certain carelessness Ivan showed him. Hitherto, at least, I have stood in the front ranks of all that is progressive in Europe, and here the new generation positively ignores us, he thought. Fyodor Pavlovich, who had given his word to sit still and be quiet, had actually been quiet for some time, but he watched his neighbour Musov with an ironical little smile, obviously enjoying his discomfiture. He had been waiting for some time to pay off old scores, and now he could not let the opportunity slip. Bending over his shoulder, he began teasing him again in a whisper. Why didn't you just go away just now after the courteously kissing? Why did you consent to remain in such unseemly company?
was because you felt insulted and aggrieved, and you remained to vindicate yourself by showing off your intelligence. Now you won't go till you've displayed your intellect to them. You again? On the contrary, I'm just going. You'll be the last of us all to go.
Fyodor Pavlovich delivered him another thrust, almost at the moment of Father Zosima's return. The discussion died down for a moment, but the elder, seating himself in his former place, looked at them all as though cordially inviting them to go on. Alyosha, who knew every expression of his face, saw that he was fearfully exhausted and making a great effort. Of late he had been liable to fainting fits from exhaustion. His face had the pallor that was common before such attacks, and his lips were white. But he evidently did not want to break up the party. He seemed to have some special object of his own in keeping them. What object? Alyosha watched him intently.
"We are discussing this gentleman's most interesting article," said Father Yosef, the librarian, addressing the elder and indicating Ivan. "He brings forward much that is new, but I think the argument cuts both ways. It is an article written in answer to a book by an ecclesiastical authority on the question of the ecclesiastical court and the scope of its jurisdiction."
"I'm sorry I have not read your article, but I've heard of it," said the elder, looking keenly and intently at Ivan.
"He takes up a most interesting position," continued the father librarian. "As far as church jurisdiction is concerned, he is apparently quite opposed to the separation of church from state."
"That's interesting. But in what sense?"
Father Zosima asked Ivan. The latter at last answered him, not condescendingly, as Alyosha had feared, but with modesty and reserve, with evident goodwill and apparently without the slightest arrière-pensée. "I start from the position that this confusion of elements, that is, of the essential principles of church and state, will of course go on forever, in spite of the fact that it is impossible for them to mingle, and that the confusion of these elements cannot lead to any consistent or even normal results, for there is falsity at the very foundation of it. Compromise between the church and state in such questions as, for instance, jurisdiction, is, to my thinking, impossible in any real sense. My clerical opponent maintains that the church holds a precise and defined position in the state. I maintain, on the contrary, that the church ought to include the whole state, and not simply to occupy a corner in it. And if this is for some reason impossible at present, then it ought, in reality, to be set up as the direct and chief aim of the future development of Christian society."
"Perfectly true,"
Father Paisi, the silent and learned monk, assented with fervour and decision.
"The purest ultramontanism,"
cried Miusov impatiently, crossing and recrossing his legs.
"Oh, well, we have no mountains," cried Father Yosef,
and turning to the elder, he continued,
"Observe the answer he makes to the following fundamental and essential propositions of his opponent, who is, you must note, an ecclesiastic. First, that no social organization can or ought to arrogate to itself power to dispose of the civic and political rights of its members. Secondly, that criminal and civil jurisdiction ought not to belong to the church and is inconsistent with its nature, both as a divine institution and as an organization of men for religious objects. And finally, in the third place, the church is a kingdom not of this world."
"A most unworthy play upon words for an ecclesiastic."
Father Paisi could not refrain from breaking in again.
"I've read the book which you have answered,"
he added, addressing Ivan, "and was astounded at the words, 'The church is a kingdom not of this world.' If it is not of this world, then it cannot exist on earth at all.
In the gospel, the words 'not of this world' are not used in that sense. To play with such words is indefensible. Our Lord Jesus Christ came to set up the church upon earth. The kingdom of heaven, of course, is not of this world, but in heaven. But it is only entered through the church, which has been founded and established upon earth. And so, a frivolous play upon words in such a connection is unpardonable and improper. The church is, in truth, a kingdom and ordained to rule, and in the end must undoubtedly become the kingdom ruling over all the earth. For that, we have the divine promise."
He ceased speaking suddenly, as though checking himself. After listening attentively and respectfully, Ivan went on, addressing the elder with perfect composure, and as before, with ready cordiality.
The whole point of my article lies in the fact that during the first 3 centuries, Christianity only existed on earth in the church and was nothing but the church. When the pagan Roman Empire desired to become Christian, it inevitably happened that, by becoming Christian, it included the church but remained a pagan state in very many of its departments. In reality, this was bound to happen. But Rome as a state retained too much of the pagan civilization and culture, as, for example, in the very objects and fundamental principles of the state. The Christian church entering into the state could, of course, surrender no part of its fundamental principles, the rock on which it stands, and could pursue no other aims than those which have been ordained and revealed by God himself, and among them that of drawing the whole world, and therefore the ancient pagan state itself, into the church. In that way, that is, with a view to the future, it is not the church that should seek a definite position in the state, like every social organization, or as an organization of men for religious purposes, as my opponent calls the church. But on the contrary, every earthly state should be, in the end, completely transformed into the church, and should become nothing else but a church, rejecting every purpose incongruous with the aims of the church. All this will not degrade it in any way, or take from its honor and glory as a great state, nor from the glory of its rulers, but only turns it from a false, still pagan, and mistaken path to the true and rightful path, which alone leads to the eternal goal. This is why the author of the book, On the Foundations of Church Jurisdiction, would have judged correctly if, in seeking and laying down those foundations, he had looked upon them as only a temporary compromise, inevitable in our sinful and imperfect days. But as soon as the author ventures to declare that the foundations which he predicates now, part of which Father Joseph just enumerated, are the permanent, essential, and eternal foundations, he is going directly against the church and its sacred and eternal vocation. That is the gist of my article. That is, in brief, Father Paisi began again, laying stress on each word, according to certain theories only too clearly formulated in the 19th century, the church ought to be transformed into the state, as though this would be an advance from a lower to a higher form, so as to disappear into it, making way for science, for the spirit of the age, and civilization. And if the church resists and is unwilling, some corner will be set apart for her in the state, and even that under control. And this will be so everywhere in all modern European countries. But Russian hopes and conceptions demand not that the church should pass as from a lower into a higher type into the state, but, on the contrary, that the state should end by being worthy to become only the church and nothing else. So be it. So be it.
Well, I confess you've reassured me somewhat, Miusov said, smiling, again crossing his legs. So far as I understand, then, the realization of such an ideal is infinitely remote at the second coming of Christ. That's as you please. It's a beautiful utopian dream of the abolition of war, diplomacy, banks, and so on. Something after the fashion of socialism, indeed. But I imagine that it was all meant seriously, and that the church might be now going to try criminals and sentence them to beating, prison, and even death.
Chapter 4. A Hymn and a Secret. It was quite late. Days are short in November, when Alyosha rang at the prison gate. It was beginning to get dusk. But Alyosha knew that he would be admitted without difficulty. Things were managed in our little town, as everywhere else. At first, of course, on the conclusion of the preliminary inquiry, relations and a few other persons could only obtain interviews with Mitya by going through certain inevitable formalities. But later, though the formalities were not relaxed, exceptions were made for some, at least, of Mitya's visitors. So much so that sometimes the interviews with the prisoner in the room set aside for the purpose were practically tête-à-tête. These exceptions, however, were few in number. Only Grushenka, Alyosha, and Rakitin were treated like this. But the captain of the police, Mikhail Mikhailovich, was very favourably disposed to Grushenka. His abuse of her at Makroy weighed on the old man's conscience, and when he learned the whole story he completely changed his view of her. And strange to say, though he was firmly persuaded of his guilt, Yet after Mitya was once in prison, the old man came to take a more and more lenient view of him.
He was a man of good heart, perhaps, he thought, who had come to grief from drinking and dissipation.
His first horror had been succeeded by pity. As for Alyosha, the police